Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. And Pete, we are joined by special guest LeBron James. How exciting is that?
Yeah.
Let's just, I don't want to waste too much of his time, though, so I'll just dive right in with a question. LeBron, what did you think of people calling you washed and the role that that's played in the beginning of the season that you've had thus far? I appreciate.
I was wondering where we're going with that. I was like, yeah, because we don't have LeBron James here.
Whoa, there. Happening? Whoa, Pete. Whoa. Oh, sorry. That's all the time you had, LeBron. I'll let you get back to the to enjoying your Tuesday night, Taco Tuesday night. welcome to the show. I haven't even started drinking yet.
You haven't?
I haven't. Haven't. I poured a glass like he had. I haven't started drinking, but.
Yeah. Oh, boy. How far into this are we?
I was so angry at myself for not working that. By the way, in case you guys didn't know, the reason that that came up is LeBron was like walking out of dinner that he went out to dinner with Chris Paul in Oklahoma City and had some people, it looked like, yelling questions at him or asking him questions. And as he was getting into the car, he ripped a ginormous, like, grown man post-steakhouse fart that echoed all the way across the across the parking lot. Yeah, the entire way across the parking lot to the people who were asking him those questions. And honestly, I have never been more proud of a celebrity. Like, that's
it was a solid effort for sure.
That's the perfect response. If people are asking you annoying questions and you're holding one in, like, that's the best way. He lifted his leg and everything. It was incredible. So that's where that joke came from, and that's where the appearance that he just made on our show came from. So far this year, we've had Kobe, and we have had LeBron on the show. You're having a good year so far. Today's show, we are going to answer questions.
He's laughing in my face.
I wish you guys could see Pete's face right now. We're going to answer questions. We have a ton to catch back up on as we get ready for the holiday weekend. So let's just dive right in. First question comes from Palinka 2020. Hey, guys, thankful for what you do. Best podcast out there and best real honest perspective on the Lakers. I would imagine the opinion on that has changed after this episode. My question is how this question is about looking forward to 2021. I know we want to enjoy the success that we have now and smell the roses, but I can't stop thinking about that offseason and the change that it could bring. Something that has caught my attention is Masai Ujiri's contract is set to expire that year. Do you think it's possible the Lakers will pursue him as a president of basketball operations in an effort to pursue Giannis? The two already have some kind of relationship and don't share the commonality of both share the commonality of being international ambassadors to the game. P.S. Pineapple on pizza is great, and I don't think you guys swear too much on the show. So,
well, thank you for at least half of that. Although, what was his username again? His
Palinka 2020
asking us about replacing him with besides Jerry.
I was laughing about that when I first saw the question. I don't think the Lakers can fire Palinka right now. Like, if they were going to do it, it would have been last offseason, and all he did was put together a roster that currently sits at 14-2 and could win a championship. And if you do bring in Masai Ujiri, so now you're going to make him Palinka's boss?
Right. That would be the difficult part. I know this sounds crazy considering the circumstances. I would totally replace Palinka with Masai Ujiri. Like, Masai Ujiri is the best GM in basketball, in my opinion. If you give him the Lakers resources along with, like, the guys that he finds, look how good they are this year.
Yeah.
And you've got guys like Chris Boucher and Terrence Davis, these guys that are contributing to a very good team out east without Kawhi, Siakam. Like a GM's job goes beyond just the guys that you get on the court. It's like, who are your player development guys? Yeah, and so just seeing a guy like Siakam grow, Alex McKechnie, who's their director of sports performance over there, old Laker guy who's, you know, kind of on the cutting edge of the health and training and things like that. So, like, Masai is amazing. He's the best GM in basketball. So if you get a chance to pair him with the team that has the best resources, then I think you do it. And that's with full acknowledgement that Pelinka's done a wonderful job, and all of our fears about him, he's addressed a lot of them. And like, I'm really, if Pelinka keeps performing at this level, you're not going to get any complaints out of me. I just think Masai is the very best in the game. And when you have a chance to do that, you get someone like that.
Yeah. I mean, this is a matter of what do we think would the Lakers should do, and the difference between that and what they will do. We just, they don't hang their own out to dry like that. And with the people in the organization, right? They don't do that.
They would never do it. It's just purely theoretical at this
point. Yeah. I would completely agree. And the relationship with Giannis can't be overlooked as well. That's going to be somebody that they're going to be pursuing. And we already saw them, in my opinion, kind of screw up the situation by not hiring Ujiri and the role that that might have played in not acquiring Kawhi this last offseason, not convincing Kawhi to come in free agency. So, yeah, I would personally do it. I just don't think the Lakers operate that way.
Yeah.
Trojan Jake 123 writes, "Hey guys, love the podcast. Straight to it, is Doc Rivers overrated?"
Ooh. No, but he has weaknesses. Mm-hmm. It depends on what your flavor of coach is, right? Is he some, you know, brilliant X's and O's guy that's going to draw up some like six action play that gets you an open look? No, he's not really that. He has a very good command of
the room
of his personnel, mm-hmm. and how to put them in positions to succeed. So he's actually a very good fit for a team that maybe doesn't have a ton of passing, in that like he's going to space the floor, put guys in the right position. And maybe it's something that, you know, a lot of coaches would be able to do that, but he's very well respected around the league. He's a guy that the Lakers liked this past offseason, mm-hmm. as well. So I don't think he's overrated. I just think he's got a strength and weaknesses profile that if you're looking for like an X's and O's type of guy that can really draw up a hell of a play, he might not be the guy for you, but that's not to say he's not very valuable.
Yeah. I think when you're talking about coach value, I think we still aren't very good at defining it. So when you're talking about, is a coach overrated? Is he underrated? Is he or she, with Becky Hammon rising through the ranks that she is, are they overrated, underrated, overrated, properly rated? Like, that's all so dependent on the situation that they're in. Like, we saw Brad Stevens go from this wonder kid who was going to be the great up-and-coming, one of the next great NBA head coach, and then he got expectations, fell short of those expectations, and now is all of a sudden seen as this great coach again because he has lowered expectations, having fallen short of his previous expectations.
There's also a talent that comes with being able to coach superstars,
yeah.
and being able to get them to come together. Like, it's great that you can be that plucky sixth seed that I always make fun of, and that you're well-coached, you run mm-hmm. good plays and all that, if when you've got the talent there, you can't bring it together to get to the ultimate goal, but you right. can run a hell of a play. Like, the other thing's way more important, because you need the guys to be able to win a title. Like, if you yep. want to be a good, solid team, yeah, Brad Stevens is your guy. If you want to win an NBA title, still remains to be seen.
Yeah, I mean, that's why, for me personally, I think it's not really even a conversation to be had about the best coach in the history of the NBA. It's Phil Jackson. And yes, there are cases to be made for Greg Popovich, but Phil Jackson took all these superstars, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal. Pau Gasol is a little easier because he was more humble of those kinds of players. But he took all of those personalities and optimized for as long as he could the amount of winning that you could do over the course of that time. And you know, you compare that to Greg Popovich, he won all of his championships with one superstar, with one key central figure, who, by the way, Tim Duncan is not your prototype, is not the usual NBA superstar, mm-hmm. right? So I'm not saying that Greg Popovich is overrated or anything like that, though Harrison and I had some fun with that on Silver Screen and Roll, the podcast that we did the other day. But, you know, you compare what Phil Jackson did with those number of superstars to what Popovich has done since Tim Duncan has retired, right? Kind of sort of ran Kawhi Leonard out of San Antonio. Kawhi didn't seem to trust Greg Popovich. You have to note that as part of Popovich's legacy. And then, like you were talking about with Brad Stevens, he even admitted that he felt he failed that Boston Celtics team, even acknowledging how tough a personality that Kyrie apparently was and remains right now. You still have to find a way to optimize a roster with Kyrie Irving, with Gordon Hayward, albeit a lessened Gordon Hayward because of injury, and Al Horford, and, you know, he didn't. And and Phil Jackson did in those situations. I think you have to acknowledge that.
And it's way harder to go from good to great than it is to go from average or below average to good.
Yeah, absolutely. As far as is Doc Rivers overrated, underrated? I just caught a fly. But I don't think it's not really a good use of time to talk about overrated, underrated. What kind of coach are you looking for Doc Rivers to be? And I think he does understand how to relate to superstars in a way that the Clippers need him to be able to this year and moving forward with Kawhi and with Paul George.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, we are going to continue to answer your questions. Today's show is brought to you in part by MyBookie. Head on over to MyBookie.ag, use a promo code LOCKEDONNBA, and double your initial input if you're a first-time user. Today's MyBookie bet of the day. The Lakers are in action by the time you guys are listening to this tonight. They are in New Orleans. They are favored by 6.5 points, which means technically because they're on the road, they're favored by 3.5 points, as that's usually what you're accounting for there. Pete, do you think the Lakers can take care of business and win by 7 or more?
Yes, I think so. I think they're going to rally around Anthony Davis in his return to New Orleans and be more of a unified front and be a little more focused. Now, a lot of those ex-Lakers will be too, but I think that the better team is going to come together. That New Orleans team is just awful defensively, and they give up a lot in the paint. And I think that Lakers players are going to rally around their guys. Are you on the same page?
I don't know. I think they win. I think the Lakers win, but I don't know that they get to the 7-point mark. Anthony Davis is very capable of floating through. So even floating through a game, and even while the Lakers are going to rally around him, and while I would imagine they're going to start the game, LeBron is probably going to start the game by trying to force feed Anthony Davis. I don't know if that's actually the proper approach there with him. So I think it kind of, it's one of those games, like I'm foreseeing one of those kinds of games where Davis, you just kind of like wait for him, like, all right, man, make your impact, especially on the offensive end. And they wait a little too long. Now, I think the Lakers win. I just don't know if they cover the points. Do you want to add this to the board?
Yeah, let's add this to the board. We got to put stakes on it.
All right, we'll add this to the board. And I have the Lakers winning by fewer than 7. So Pete has Lakers. I have New Orleans, apparently. Although it does make me nervous how bad they are defensively, New Orleans. Like, it wouldn't shock me. I just don't know if I would. Honestly, this is more of a stay-away game. I would probably stay away from this bet.
Yeah, no, I think I don't feel terribly strongly in my opinion either, so I would agree with that.
All right, mybookie.ag is the place to place your bets, win your money, and then collect your money. That last step is very, very important, and MyBookie prides themselves on being the fastest to get you your money after you win. So again, go to mybookie.ag, use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA, and double your initial investment into the website. It's a great place to place bets, not just on basketball, but on football and all sorts of things, college and pro. So join us over there at mybookie.ag. MyBookie.ag, you play, you win, you get paid. All right. George Bautista writes, or Jorge, I don't know how you want to pronounce that. George Bautista writes, when the rotation's sorting in the playoffs, who do you see being the 7 to 10 playoff rotation guys? I know it's early to talk playoffs, but I would love to hear your thoughts. What would our death lineup be if we do get Iggy? I could see the closing lineup of Bradley Green, Iggy, LeBron, and AD, but Iggy would reduce Kuz's playoff time. Keep up the good work. Also, pineapple does not belong on pizza. So this person hates Kyle Kuzma and pineapple.
So I think you may have been onto something before the season when you were like, let's not write Kuzma in pen in that final five. He's still getting used to like the intensity level and the, you know, like there are some mistakes that he makes that are just young player mistakes that I do wonder if we get an Andre Iguodala, if he replaces Kuzma and it's Avery Bradley that gets those minutes, or it's KCP, or, and Lord knows KCP makes mistakes too, but KCP's are less on the defensive end, and it's more like a dumb play with the ball in his hands that shouldn't happen too often.
Yeah.
You know, with the type of players that we have. So I actually think, yeah, it would be Iggy and Avery Bradley to form just an insane Bradley, Green, Iggy, LeBron, Anthony Davis combo. And then it comes to, like, the Lakers haven't been good with AD at the five. Is it Dwight Howard in one of those spots instead of Avery Bradley or instead of Andre Iguodala? I think Iggy would be one of the final five. But, yeah, maybe Dwight gets those minutes to close games. So it'll be interesting. Kuzma definitely has an uphill battle to get those closing minutes in the games that matter the most.
I'm still not positive the Lakers get Iguodala.
I actually don't think they do get Iguodala. I think that he'll be traded for elsewhere.
Yeah, so I'm going to address this as if the Lakers don't get him, because I don't see them getting him. It's just that you're asking for way too much money to be given up on either side of that equation. Either Memphis pays Iguodala way too much money to not play for them, or Iguodala gives up way too much money in order to be freed from Memphis.
Yeah.
So my 7 to 10, I guess, playoff rotation guys, the guys I'm comfortable enough writing into the rotation right now, I have Avery Bradley, like the starting lineup, obviously, Avery Bradley, Danny Green, LeBron, Anthony Davis, and I'm not positive about JaVale McGee quite yet, so I'll put Dwight Howard in that spot. I do think Kuzma will be a part of the rotation, though how big a part of that rotation come playoff time is going to remain to be seen. KCP, I think, has actually earned his way into that rotation right now in ways that, frankly, we didn't necessarily see coming. Rajon Rondo is also going to be involved, and Alex Caruso is probably going to be involved. I think JaVale McGee is kind of that line of demarcation between, you know, regular season roster and playoff roster.
Do you think JaVale will continue to start? Like, I think he probably plays, you know, instead of 6 minute shifts or 8 minute shifts, maybe 4 minute shifts to start games. I don't think, and maybe it'll be matchup specific, but I think there's still a decent chance he gets two shifts. Do you think that he'd be out of it altogether?
It depends on how good the team, like, I could see him getting first round minutes.
Right? I totally see where you're going. Yeah.
And then as the playoffs get along and the opponents get tougher, I think that really gets down to a point where they get trimmed, and then he's out altogether. That's kind of how I see the playoffs going. The death lineup, I kind of want to see what it looks like with Bradley and KCP defending the perimeter. Like, I would like to see Avery Bradley, KCP, Danny Green, LeBron, and Anthony Davis. KCP has played that well. And now his shot is going to regress at some point. I think he's hitting like 56% from 3-point range over his last six games.
He's 44% from three on the year. Like,
yeah.
As bad as he started out. Like, honestly, with KCP, it's like, you're going to have to ask me in the moment, because are we getting good KCP or bad KCP in any particular series? That'll determine how much you should play.
Yep. All right, let's go to Shelby underscore D writing, what's your favorite movie in each of these sports? Basketball, baseball, football, golf, hockey. Mine are Above the Rim, Sandlot, Rudy, Happy Gilmore, D2, The Mighty Ducks. Thanks and love the show.
All right, so basketball is White Men Can't Jump. Mm-hmm. Baseball is Major League.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good one.
Football? Gosh, I don't know if I have like a football movie that I love. Hockey? Yeah, you got a Mighty Ducks, Child of the 90s for sure. Mm-hmm. What was the other one?
Golf.
Golf. I don't care. Sorry. I'm sorry.
Bagger Vance was good. They solved racism.
I'm short. I'm short and I'm left-handed. And so like being a casual golfer is not like, you know, everyone's clubs are right-handed clubs and just it's something that you got to do a little more. I grew up in the desert, so not exactly golf courses all over the place. So if you enjoy golf, good on you. Just not on my radar.
Fun fact, I actually am left-handed, but my mom switched me over to being right-handed because it'd be easier to find golf clubs.
There you go.
Yeah. So I love golf personally. When I have time, I'm an avid golfer. So I'm with you on White Men Can't Jump and Major League for sure. Although Field of Dreams has to be mentioned. Has to. That's just, it's impossible to go through that entire movie and not weep like a child.
I like Bull Durham's up there too. Yeah, that may be dating me a little bit, but that was a great movie.
Also Rookie of the Year. For some reason, baseball lends itself to movies really well.
I feel like basketball movies aren't made correctly. Like it's always some sort of like the team is down and the coach authority figure comes in to like rally them and whatnot. And that's part of why I love White Men Can't Jump is because it's about the players and it's about like that pickup basketball in LA. Like it's a very LA movie and it's about the people and the players rather than this like guy comes in to save the day type thing that I think has been done a zillion times.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's why that's my favorite basketball movie.
I'm going to combine hockey and golf and say Happy Gilmore.
There you go. Okay, yeah. That's my vote too. That's my vote. I love Happy Gilmore.
It's so freaking good. It's aged well too. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Travis for Prez. We've got a lot of presidential candidates in this mailbag.
We do. It's coming to that time of every 4 years.
It's going
to
be gross. This next.
Oh boy. Yeah. Let's set off for as long as we can, man, because we're going to have to do it. So.
Hey guys, thanks for being a fun listen and congrats on all the success you both had. Thank you. Question. Before the season started, you both stated what you typically try to look for when trying to assess whether a player's age is significantly affecting their play. I think Pete mentioned that he looks for the misses around the rim. So far, I've seen LeBron miss those quite a bit, but I don't know if I'm overanalyzing and this is a normal amount. What do you guys think?
I've been pretty happy with LeBron's, like
everything,
how he's 80. Well, yeah, of course. I mean, it's like, he's playing like he's in his prime, you know, like this is height of his powers type of LeBron. He's scoring a little less and assisting a little bit more, but I'm pulling up right now his shooting around the rim. So from 0 to 3 feet, this is you guys caught it. So he is shooting the second worst mark of his career at 67.7%. His average of over the course of his career is 73.3. And last year he was at 75.5. So that's an interesting thing to see if that continues. I wonder if the Lakers spacing factors into that, but yeah, that's, you know, his worst mark of his career was as a rookie. So, that could be one of those signs.
What was he at last year compared to this year?
He was at 75.5%, which so the last 4 years, 4 years ago it was 78%, dropped a little to 76.6, dropped a little more to 75.5. Now a big drop to 67.7. Mm-hmm. He throughout his career has been in the low to mid, and really his prime was in the high 70s. He is in Miami, his last year was 79.6%, which is just an insane number. To this point as well, the percentage of dunks that he has is actually the lowest of his career. 6.2% of his shot attempts are dunks this year. He's only had 21 of them made. The next closest was 6.4% also as a rookie. So yeah, those are two factors that I think that's an astute observation by this listener that, you know, hopefully isn't a sign of things to come, or hopefully he can adjust, because within all that, like we said, he's playing ball.
Yeah. That's the thing is that, you know, with a lot of guys, as they age, it's a matter of whether or not they adjust to their aging. Mm-hmm. And like Charles Barkley said that he knew that he was aging when he got the ball under the basket and started pump faking a ton. And he like consciously recognized that he was pump faking a ton. And he, I think he made that point talking about Kobe, where Kobe got the ball and was under the basket and had a step on his defender and then went to pump faking. Chuck basically said, "Oh, I know that.
Yeah, that's it right there. Yeah, sure.
I just played basketball the other night with my little brother, and same kind of thing. Usually I would, you know, I got a step on him going to my left, and I'm left-handed, so I'd like to shoot the pull-up jumper where I, with the space that I create, and subconsciously, consciously, whatever, I pump faked and did the up and under because he's taller than me, more athletic than me, and I'm fat now. So yeah, I
you know instinctively, like, yeah, I'm gonna eat that if I try to put this shot up.
Exactly. So yeah, I think while, I mean, it's empirical, it's not something that I can really disagree with, LeBron's kind of decline around the rim, I do think, though, that he's smart enough and also big enough to adjust to playing a little bit lower on average than he has over the course of his career.
Yeah.
The thing that makes me really nervous, though, like more nervous than his shooting around the rim, actually, is, and I actually think this might actually play a role in his decline at the rim. He, over his last 10 games, is shooting like 55.6% from the free throw line. And when LeBron is at his best, right, he doesn't care about contact because he's just going to get to the free throw line. But I think when you start shooting as poorly from the line as LeBron has over this stretch, you start to contort your body in ways that you wouldn't normally, and that's obviously going to impact your ability to finish around the rim. So,
yeah, he's getting fewer free throw attempts too,
yeah,
which probably factors in as well.
Yeah, so I think those two, I would imagine there's a correlation between all of that stuff that we're talking about there.
Yeah.
Let's take another quick second here. When we come back, we're going to keep on answering your questions. It's funny, I mentioned the free throw thing on Twitter earlier today, and Carter Rodriguez, who does the Chase Down pod, quote tweeted and said, like, it's this weird thing that every single year for like a stretch of 10 games or so, LeBron will just forget how to shoot free throws.
That's interesting.
And that, like, while he was in Miami, apparently Ray Allen took him aside and worked on his free throws. And then while he was in Cleveland, Kyle Korver took him aside to work on his free throws. So I guess what we need to have happen is, like, Anthony Davis to
take. Who's shooting, like, 90% from the line somehow.
Yeah. I really think with LeBron's free throws, he doesn't have a consistent routine. It's insane to watch.
He had adjusted that at the beginning of the season where he was kind of holding the ball out. He's being more like, mm-hmm. He gets in trouble when he kind of leans left, which he likes to do on his jump shot, but that's not really conducive to free throw shooting. Mm-hmm. And like when he goes up straight or he leans forward, he's usually a lot more accurate. And he was like holding, like he wasn't going behind his head with his shot as much. There were a few things that were different that he's just kind of gone away from. I wonder if it's just fatigue or if there's something that
boredom,
like there was no reason to change what he was doing when it was working.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I've noticed because he'll go through, like, he has one routine where he even like slides his left foot out and slides it back in. I don't think you want to introduce any kind of lateral movement to a free throw. He has one that really not upsets me. I guess triggers me is what is the word that millennials are using, that the kids are using. But he has this one routine where he'll stop and have the ball in front of his face for a solid few seconds and then shoot it. Mm-hmm. And like Tim Duncan used to shoot his free throws like that.
Oh, and yeah. Those were missiles.
Yeah. And when you stare at the rim for that long, like all you're doing is thinking about the mistakes that you could be making in that shot.
Sure. Right? You're building tension in your body too.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would like to see a more consistent, I would actually really like it if somebody asked him about his free throw shooting. I would really like it if somebody asked him, hey, we've noticed that you have multiple routines from the free throw line that you've been going to lately over the last 10 games or so. You've been your free throw rate and your percentage that you're shooting there is down. What do you think might be going into play there? I'd be really interested to see what his thoughts on it might be, although – it might also be the kind of thing that he gives the answer that he gave that we started the show with too. So
yeah, that's if he could do that in a scrum, he absolutely would. if he goes and wins the MVP this year, you know, like I think he's allowed at least one of those in the playoffs.
Yep. Yes, absolutely. I'm stopping myself from making the joke about who he would do that to, but
yeah, probably not a good path to go down.
By Magic writes, fun question, hopefully, LOL. First, not claiming to be an expert. Hell no. Great instincts in general, though. It's cool. I really wanted the Lakers to trade BI in a first, I believe, to the Hawks to get Luka Doncic. I've missed, like, on Curry being injury prone back in the day, but I was right on this guy. I guess my question is, what are your hits and misses? What would the Lakers look like with him had they made that trade for Doncic? And would the Lakers trade him for AD still? Probably a better offseason question, but thanks.
Okay, so hits and misses. My recent misses have been De'Aaron Fox and Kristaps Porzingis. Sort of Brandon Ingram. I always acknowledged that Ingram had a really high ceiling. He just had a long way to go to get there. And mm-hmm. So it's unusual for a guy, like, he was a baby deer when he came into the league at 18 years old. And he has come so far over the last 4 years that major props to him. So my skepticism on him was incorrect regarding, like, will he be able to get there? But I did acknowledge that he was a 6'9" guy with 7'3" wingspan and ball handling ability, right? So he always could get to this. Fox and Porzingis and Ingram fits into this too, have made me realize a blind spot that I have in that if somebody has an elite physical trait and good work ethic, which is hard to know, right? Mm-hmm. It's hard to know which of these guys coming into a draft are, you know, work hard. And in the case of Porzingis, I don't know if he's got a great work ethic, but he's got skills at 7'3". If you've got Porzingis' size and can shoot, if you've got Ingram's size and length and ball handling ability, and De'Aaron Fox is just his speed in person, oh my God.
Yeah.
If you've got those, like, elite, best of the best type of attributes, coming in not terribly skilled is not the worst thing in the world, especially if you've got a work ethic like a guy like Brandon Ingram has, right? Mm-hmm. You are going to eventually, like, that's a combination that's going to add up at some point to make you a really high-level player. I do not remember the rest of his question, but I hope that answers that at least.
Well, I'll answer the first part of the question too, and then we'll get to the Doncic stuff. So, I don't think we have to call Doncic a miss quite yet. Like, he's obviously signed a huge second contract, which is indicative of having shown plenty to this point of his career.
You mean Porzingis?
Porzingis, yeah. What did I say?
You said Doncic, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, Porzingis is... I don't see the purpose of him being 7'3".
To get his shot off whenever he wants. But yeah, he's not I'm working on this piece for The Athletic on Luka's pick and rolls. Mm-hmm. And there have only been a couple of plays this whole season where Luka has hit Porzingis on a roll.
Yeah.
He hits him on the pop all the time, but he's not a roll threat, which is, you'd figure, like, that's a great, Luka's great at throwing lobs. Collectively, they've got a ton of size for pick and roll combination. That should be something that works a lot, but they just don't do it.
Mm-hmm. My biggest miss of all time was Javaris Crittenton. I thought he was going to be really, really good.
He started out really well. He was great in summer league, started out in mm-hmm. preseason, early season pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought he was going to be, you know, one of the top tier point guards, but yeah, you know, gun stuff will get you into trouble. The second part of the question here was, how would trading Ingram and a first to the Hawks to get Doncic, like, how would that have changed everything to this point, ripple effect and stuff?
Oh boy, I don't know how I could do that, but if you've got a chance to make that trade, like, yeah, you absolutely make mm-hmm. it. I don't think that Atlanta would have gone for that at the time, but Luka, I mean, there's a lot of talk about Luka, and he's got, you know, his plus minus numbers aren't great. He's a poor defender, which is probably why his plus minus stuff isn't great. Mm-hmm. But offensively, he's Dynamo. Putting up like 31, 10 and 10, mm-hmm. 63% true shooting, leading, I think, what's currently the most efficient offense, although they're getting whooped on as we record this by the mm-hmm. Clippers. at age 20, like these are unprecedented type of numbers at his age. And just like his skill set, like that dude's a monster, man. And so like, yeah, if you can get a superstar caliber player, that would be amazing. And it would, you know, any concerns I have about somebody who can score off a ball screen or create other than LeBron, obviously that would be great. But can you still get Anthony Davis with what you have left over? Probably not. So that's the whole, you know, butterfly effect and whatnot. I'm happy with where we're at. If you can get a Luka, great. But I just don't think that that was something that Hawks would have gone for in the first place.
I don't know how well Luka develops around LeBron. Luka needs the ball. And
that's a good point.
And I don't think we would be seeing the same Luka right now around LeBron that, you know, that you're seeing right now with Luka basically being given the keys to an entire organization. Now, he's good enough. Like, the difference here is that, like, Ingram could have been, you know, in the right situation. Like, basically right now, New Orleans handed Ingram the keys to an organization.
Right.
And as a result, now they're missing Zion, obviously, and I'm really curious to see what Ingram looks like once Zion shows up and his usage rate goes down. But, you know, you hand the keys to Brandon Ingram and you get that kind of an organization, and you hand the keys to Luka and you get that kind of a result. And I just, all that said, I it's the same thing we always talk about when people ask us about acquisitions and looking back and this and that and the other. The Lakers are 14-2, and that's really all I care about right now.
15-2 even.
Yeah, 15-2. Yeah, you're right. Caveat writes, now that you've seen a game with PG and Kawhi together, what do you think? And thoughts on the rematch against the Lakers? This is a good one to wrap up on, seeing as you mentioned, the Clippers are taking the Mavericks to town.
Yeah, I mean, we know they're going to be good. Paul George, his ability to do this in the playoffs will be very critical. I think he's more of a guy who can fall by the wayside than Kawhi is, although Kawhi's physical stuff, you know, you've alluded to this a couple of times about kind of what the rumors around the league and all that. Like, if this is the Kawhi that we face in the playoffs and you just slap, you know, Anthony Davis on him and Danny Green on Paul George, feel pretty good about where we're at. So before the season, we had a pod with Justin Russo on, and I had the Clippers as a 60-40 favorite. Right now, I actually think the Lakers have a slight edge over them, probably 55-45. This is a better Lakers team than I expected them to be.
The thing that I've always been nervous about with the Clippers is, where's the creativity for others coming from? And right now, I don't know what their turnovers look like tonight, but heading into tonight, they were turning the ball over like the 26th most in the NBA, or, you know, and so that makes me really nervous. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that you have Paul George and Kawhi, who the most assists either of those guys have ever had in a season at the end of the year was 4.1 per game. And you're asking players like that to now handle the creativity. That's, you look at LeBron this year, and he's averaging as many assists as he is, and he's accustomed to that role. He's used to creating for everybody else. Those guys aren't quite accustomed to it. Now, can they develop that over the course of the season? That's, to me, the biggest question facing them. The other concern that I have with them is they have very clear-cut lineups based on situation. So their best defensive lineup is not nearly what their best offensive lineup is. It's completely different personnel. And those kinds of teams, like when you have to basically choose one over the other over the course of a 7-game series, those types of teams are usually easy to take advantage of because you can game plan one versus the other. And, you know, you look at the Lakers' best lineups, and there's a lot of mix and match between what their best defensive lineups are and what their best offensive lineups are. So,
no, that's a fair point. I actually think a Lakers-Clippers series, for exactly that reason, might be more of a shootout than people would expect.
Yeah.
Like, I could see those being in the 110-120 type of range, even in the playoffs, for exactly those reasons, is that you're going to have Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams out there alongside Kawhi and Paul George. But like, the Lakers have a wing guy in LeBron who, like, good luck stopping them with Kawhi or Paul George, as great as they are defensively. Yeah. Like, and who is Patrick Beverley going to guard? Like, if he's still a great defender, like, is he locking up Avery Bradley? Like, okay, so what? You know, so yeah. I don't think that their best defensive guys match our best guys. And I think that LeBron, remember, it was kind of a dud that first game of the season. LeBron playing at this level, I think the Lakers win that game on Christmas if he's playing this way.
Yeah, I can't wait for that game on Christmas. The other thing too is, like, right now the Lakers are playing some of the best basketball of that they probably will play all year, just because of the opponents that they're going up against, and the Clippers are still trying to work Paul George and Kawhi in right now. So that's part of why I'm glad that we now have a full month between now and that Christmas Day game, which, by the way, wouldn't shock me at all if Kawhi isn't playing on Christmas.
Yeah.
Wouldn't shock me at all. It would piss me off, but it wouldn't shock me at all. I kind of think as we find out more about what these teams look like, we'll start to really be able to assess what they're, because when we talked to Justin, it was a purely hypothetical conversation, purely theoretical. Now we have some information, but it's kind of flawed information. So as we get further into the year, I'm looking forward to having more concrete information on how the teams might match up.
Yeah.
All right, this was fun. We answered quite a few questions today, so we're catching back up to you guys as we head into the holidays. Again, fun game. You had the Lakers beating New Orleans handily, it seems.
Yeah, I think they rally around AD.
Yeah, I think they try to rally around him, and he kind of floats a little bit. That's how I see it going.
Interesting. We may have to explore that in a future pod.
We might. Have a great rest of your day, though. Thank you for the questions, and we will talk to you tomorrow.